Welcome to Pigskins and Pageantry, a podcast dedicated to all things SEC football. My name is Wes, and I'd like to invite you to join me, Jesse, and Matt each week as we discuss last week's games, news from around the league, make predictions for the upcoming games, and much, much more. Happy November, everybody. You know what that means. Things are getting down to the nitty-gritty, as Nacho from Nacho Libre would say. We're going to talk about the games from last week, make predictions for next week, and dissect the very first CFP rankings of the season. I was so excited I couldn't even say it. Matt, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. It's been a long week. I can't believe it's only Wednesday, but we're getting there slowly and surely. And by the way, on a personal note, Christmas music is not allowed until after Thanksgiving, just so we're all clear on
that. That's a very polarizing topic this time of year.
They can sound off in the comments. I'm right.
True, yeah. No. Jesse had to, she had prior obligations, so she's not here this week, but I figure we've done a double dose of Georgia fans a few weeks. We've done a double dose of Bama. Why not do a double dose of Vols 1 week? So we welcome back a work colleague of mine and very distinguished guest who returns to the show. Grant, what's up, man?
What's up, guys? Yeah, no, it's good to be back out of this world, man. It's been a long week, and for Tennessee fans, you know, I think it's been a long couple weeks since that.
Hey, let the man cook, Wes. Go ahead, Grant.
Go Vols. That's it. Everything's great. Go Vols. Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about the games of last week, and we'll get to it.
Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
All right. Well, first from last week's games with South Carolina at Texas A&M. A&M won this one 30-17. I got the point here. Carolina scored first, but A&M ran away with the rest of it. I saw afterwards Beamer was saying that they stayed in the fight, but we saw an A&M team that is improving and a Carolina team that has regressed, in my opinion. I get it. We expect this from A&M at Kyle Field, but these were two teams that were comparable last year. Heck, Carolina had a better record last year. A&M went 5-7 and Carolina went 8-5. So these programs appear to be headed in very different directions. Grant, let's start with you first on this one. What was your impression of South Carolina at Texas A&M and just your kind of thoughts on those two programs?
Yeah, so this game really kind of shook out how I foresaw it shaking out. What you had was a bad South Carolina offensive line matched up a pretty decent Aggie, you know, front seven there. And they, you know, kind of dominated, put a lot of pressure on Rattler. Wasn't his best game. Now, I will say, you know, not to discredit Rattler, he is, you know, making chicken salad out of a really bad offensive line. And I think the job that he has done individually is pretty admirable, I guess you could say. But beyond that, though, I mean, Texas A&M's defense kind of just dominated South Carolina. They only had, 209 total yards. So Anaya Smith continues to be, you know, a workhorse for A&M in the backfield. Overall, though, I mean, like I said, it kind of shook out the way that I foresaw it. A&M controlled the clock. South Carolina, I don't know what's going on with them this year. Maybe, you know, people have kind of figured out Beamer ball and the little tricks behind it. I don't know. But overall, about what I kind of expected. And, I mean, A&M's not that bad of a team. South Carolina, unfortunately, this year they are.
Well, Matt loves Beamer ball. What's your thoughts, Matt?
Love is a very strong word, and that's not the right word. I have another word about Beamer ball that I would like to bring up, but we won't get into that. You know, Spencer had a rough game in this one, you know, 20 for 33 for 176 yards is well below what he's been doing so far. And I think Grant's absolutely right on the money. You have a pretty stout Texas A&M defensive line. And I mean, they gave him fits. I think they had six total sacks in this game, which I think's quite a few, not as many as Tennessee got when we played him, but he was busy all night. So as a result, four total sacks. There we go. Not the best night for him. Beamer ball as of right now is 2-6 on the season. I hate that. I wonder
You don't
if
have to sound
Beamer's
so
going to give.
excited, Matt.
I know. It's the hate and vitriol coming out. I wonder if Beamer's going to give old Khaki Pants a phone call, seeing if he can get a little bit of a leg up for what he did. So maybe they can do a little bit better. And A.S. Smith had a heck of a game. I think he had, what was it? I lost the stat. He had 118 yards and six receptions, including that big 40-plus yard touchdown pass, which looked great because when he caught the ball, he started going upfield. You thought, okay, cool, he's going to get pushed out at 12. And then he bent it back to the middle and made a heck of a play, heck of a couple plays, made a couple guys miss and was able to make a, get a pretty good touchdown. So Kitt's heck of an athlete. This is a good win for A&M. I think Carolina's having kind of a soul-searching moment. I'm not sure where they go from here. And I kind of have to wonder if with all the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, if that didn't play a small part in the preparation for this particular game.
I don't know. They're definitely going to have to
figure something out. That's a big story right now in college football is all that stuff going on with Harbaugh and the sign stealing and Stallions and all that stuff. There's a lot going on there.
Right. By the way, I just saw not long before this, and I'm sure this has been out there for a while, but, you know, TCU had heard rumor about that last year. And, you know, they used that when they played Michigan. They actually used dummy signs for the real, and, you know, they had real signs, but then they had the dummy signs that kind of harkened back to the old ones that Michigan thought they were going to use. So they kind of pulled the reverse Uno card on them for that one. So
yeah, and I apparently I also saw something the other day that said the Heupel was the one that tipped them off to that. Now whether that's accurate or not, I don't know. But right. Interesting little thing there.
Yeah. All right, let's move to Georgia at Florida from Everbank Stadium in Jacksonville, Florida. The Dogs won 43-20. I got the point here. I'm not gonna lie though, I see your face, Matt, and like you, I know it's a snooze fest in the long run, but like I was a little worried after the
first drive. What are you worried about?
Let me finish. Like after the first drive where Florida just marched right down the field, in my mind, I'm like, well, here we go. Like we've seen this before where the Dogs start slow and who knows what's gonna happen. They found holes in our defense and they scored right away. So I think there was cause for a little bit of alarm right away. But the Dogs settled down and also took advantage of some Florida miscues early and cashed in, including just a wild fourth down attempt from their own 34-yard line that failed. Thank you very much. I mean, I'll take that. It was somewhat reminiscent of, I don't know if y'all remember the Anthony Richardson game against Georgia where they scored a bunch of points all at once at the end of the first half, and that really just sort of changed the look of the game. It was not quite that extreme, but similar here. Carson Beck was impressive, moving in the pocket, especially with that perfect pass thrown to Dylan Bell in the third quarter. Question was that we were asking before this game even got started was who's going to step up right in the absence of Brock Bowers. And the team really answered that in this game, at least. Obviously we'll see for the rest, but Oscar Delp, tight end, making a few Bowers-esque plays from the tight end position, Dominic Lovett making some big catches, but really the clutch receiver ended up being Ladd McConkey. With some huge catches, including a 41-yard touchdown catch and run near the end of the first quarter. Add to that nearly 100 yards on the ground by Dejon Edwards and two touchdowns. And Kendall Milton helping with a solid rotation at running back, and the offense was pretty solid. So this is the third straight year that Georgia has beaten Florida by 20 points or more. Take that whenever we can get it. We'll see if the offense can continue this season without Brock Bowers, who – some of the announcers on Saturday were wondering if we'll even see him in a college uniform again. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I doubt it. You have to remember there's a big payday waiting for that kid come the draft. And this is not the college football of, you know, 1991 where people are going to strap it up, you know, even if they have to. It's just a situation where he has to make a business decision, and that business decision is probably going to be to stay out and train and get ready for the combine, which, you know, we'll be here before we know it. So the Dogs had to find a backup guy. They had to have a guy step up and make plays, and that was Ladd McConkey. 135 yards in the air, averaged over 20 yards a catch. A 54-yard long touchdown pass reception. So I mean, he showed the thing. But another thing that kind of jumped off about this game, was Carson Beck looked incredibly comfortable. And he did a pretty good job of managing the game, making sure everything was kind of rolling like it was supposed to. He had a heck of a ball game in this one. And, you know, Graham Mertz, to give Florida a little bit of credit too, Graham Mertz didn't have an awful game either. I mean, he still threw for 200+, which isn't a ton, but, you know, he didn't look awful. He didn't look like what we saw out of some Florida quarterbacks earlier in the season or like last year. So, you know, it's a situation where Georgia, this is a bit of a snooze fest. They got out in front and then never ever really looked back. And again, I don't blame them. I mean, you got all the weapons on the planet, and it wasn't just Bowers. It's the other guys as well. So, you know, kudos to Georgia for this. They keep rolling. The real question is, what are they going to look like when they play Missouri? And how is Florida going to bounce back after they've started off 3-2 in the conference this year?
It's a good point. Grant, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think Matt touched on a lot of good points here. You know, Carson Beck does look more comfortable and seems to be playing better every week, which I hate to see, honestly. You know, but on the same note, you know, he doesn't have a ton of experience. So I think, you know, in some of these bigger games coming up, you've got Missouri this coming weekend, and then you've got Tennessee in a couple weeks, and then Ole Miss in between, right? So I think those three are going to be a real test for Carson Beck. But like Matt said, you know, without Bowers, they still, you know, Georgia's still pressed on. Ladd McConkey, Oscar Delp. I mean, you had some guys step up. Dejon Edwards, you know, he's doing pretty well back there. He's not your typical five-star running back that you see at Georgia, but he's definitely more than serviceable, I would say. I mean, 15 carries, 96 yards, 2 touchdowns. You know, you can't really ask for a whole lot more. And like Matt said, you know, Mertz did throw the ball a bit on Georgia. And, I mean, Mertz really is not a great quarterback by any stretch. Now, granted, we were able to make him look like a Heisman, but we have that ability.
We do that all the time.
With Florida quarterbacks specifically.
Well, any quarterbacks. Let's remember what happened with Kentucky this past weekend. But go ahead.
That's true. We did do a Devin Leary a good service there. But, in any case, the fact that Mertz did throw for over 200 to me suggests that maybe Georgia's back seven is a little bit suspect. And so, you know, with Missouri coming up, a high-powered passing offense with Brady Cook, which we'll talk about in just a second, you know, that might be a little concerning for them. But essentially they have three games coming up with, I would say, outside of Tennessee, pass-heavy teams, you know. I mean, but Tennessee obviously can throw the ball. Just you never know where it's going to go. But in any case, yeah, going back to the Georgia-Florida game, overall, Dawgs took care of business, kind of went as expected, I think. You know, I don't think anybody really thought Florida had much of a chance.
You mentioned,
I thought they did for a second there.
Yeah.
I got really excited. I was like, oh, here we go. But then it just fell apart.
Well, you mentioned the experience of Carson Beck. And I was thinking about that today. I was like, you know, with Stetson Bennett, we really saw we watched him go through the ringer, right? We saw Stetson Bennett good, bad, and ugly at all points. And so I feel like he just sort of was who he was. And, you know, that's what we saw on the field every week. Carson Beck really hasn't had that kind of thing happen to him yet where he's been, you know, down. He's had some, you know, he's made some mistakes out there, but it certainly hasn't been some of the brutal situations that Stetson Bennett's had to go through. So if there was anything that worried me or that makes me kind of wonder, that would be the main thing. It's like, you know, can this guy bounce back from a major setback? Hopefully not a loss, but you know, we don't know. So, all right. Let's go ahead and move to the next one, which was Mississippi State at Auburn. Auburn won here 27-13. Jesse got the point here. This is Auburn's first win in the conference. This game wasn't really close as the lone touchdown scored by Mississippi State was in the fourth quarter. Granted, earlier in the fourth quarter, but still. State's offense has been really quiet without Will Rogers. And it makes me wonder, like, if they just aren't calling plays that put Mike Wright in a position to be successful. Obviously, his style is very different from Will Rogers. Will Rogers likes to sit back in the pocket, and Mike Wright is very much a dual threat. So it's kind of difficult to tell. You know, I feel like if that's not the case, that they're doing themselves and Mike Wright a major disservice. Grant, what were your thoughts on this one, Mississippi State at Auburn?
My thoughts are that the Pirate, bless his beautiful soul, is probably ashamed at the product that he is seeing Mississippi State put on the field. You know, I feel like they have the pieces to maybe be decent, But I mean, Auburn is not really a great team. And I mean, this is the first game where, you know, Peyton Thorne actually looked like a pretty decent quarterback. 230 yards, three touchdowns there. Hunter, you know, he's obviously a beast in the backfield. I mean, Auburn's defense has been good. And so, you know, it gave Mississippi State and that offense with Wright, gave them some difficulty. But overall, I mean, Mississippi State is just, I think they've kind of gotten away from what they're really good at or what they have been good at. And that is to have kind of a very physical defense and a power run game. They're just not getting it done. I don't know. I mean, overall, I think both teams are very mediocre in the SEC. Auburn getting that first win, that's huge for them, huge for Freeze. You know, obviously, they're going to try and build on that. I do feel like Auburn is kind of getting better week to week, whereas just kind of from what I've seen, it looks like Mississippi State is getting worse week to week. So we'll just see where it goes.
Yeah, and we've seen Auburn's defense. Like you said, they're kind of the real deal, and they will keep the game close enough in many instances. Matt, what were your thoughts on this one?
I was speaking to a friend of mine who she's actually a friend of my wife's, but she's a MSU graduate, and I asked her, I said, so how do you feel? You know, Mike Leach is gone, you know, you got Zach Arnett, and she says, Arnett's got to go somewhere. And I'm just like, that stings. And
that didn't take long.
And she says, yeah, it was nice we kept him as a gesture, but he's just not putting – it's not coming together. And I had to kind of agree with her when you look at, you know, Mississippi State's 1-4 in the conference right now. We didn't expect a lot out of them this season to begin with, but they haven't really put a great product, like Grant was saying, on the field. And Auburn, you know, Peyton Thorne was able to throw for 230-plus yards because he wasn't touched. The Mississippi State defensive line didn't get a single sack in this game. As far as tackles for losses go, they had five of them, but again, didn't really harass the quarterback much. So this is a game where Auburn got out early, out front early. They scored 24 in the first half. You go into the locker room 24-3, and Mississippi State kind of sort of climbs back into it, but it's just it's not a good team. It's just not a good team, and all the we can all hope for the best when it comes to Mississippi State, and again, rest in peace to the Pirate. But this is not going to get things done. I just don't foresee how much leash Arnett's going to get going forward. We may be looking at a coaching change probably in the next year if they continue to struggle like this. I don't think they're going to be super patient with him. And Grant, I want to talk that point where you said you think Auburn's getting better. I think you're right. I mean, this is an Auburn team that, and remind me, Wes, I don't remember. They hung with Georgia for two quarters, I think, right?
So oh, yeah. They were longer than that. I mean, it took well into the third. Yeah.
So this is an Auburn team that's showing improvement. You know, they've had a pretty rough schedule so far, and it's not going to get any easier for them. But again, you got to give Freeze a little bit of time. Freeze can win. He's been a winner everywhere he's coached, so it's only a matter of time before Auburn turns into something at least somewhat decent. But overall, it's kind of a snoozer. But again, I didn't have high expectations of this game to begin with.
Right. I think when Freeze gets his quarterback in place, that's when they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let's move to Tennessee at Kentucky. Vols won this one 33-27. Matt got the point here, and this is case in point of a double dose of Vol fandom. So let's start with Matt first on this one. What were your thoughts on Tennessee at Kentucky? Good road win for the Vols, right?
Listen, Tennessee has struggled on the road mightily this year. It's been an uphill battle both ways when you're talking about road wins. You know, this is a team that went down to the swamp at the beginning of the season and got absolutely goat roped into existence. And then, you know, a pretty awful game against Bama. I was worried going into this game. I'll be the first to admit it. Nice to see Milton have a day. You know, he went 18 for 21 for 228 yards. That's a pretty decent day. I can't remember the exact number he had on the ground, but it was pretty good if I remember. There were a couple really critical plays where he was able to get past the sticks with his feet, which we haven't seen a lot of in the last couple weeks. What we've started to see more of here as of late. Was pretty happy with that. He's safe with the ball in this game. No picks, although it seems like he's thrown a pick in every other game the last couple weeks. Jalen Wright continues to show that he's one of the best running backs in the league. I don't care what anyone says. He doesn't get near enough press. I think he's sitting at second or third in the conference as far as yards go. But when you look at who else is getting fed in that backfield, you're looking at a situation where he's a big, big name, and he needs a lot more press. You know, UT's defense did a pretty good job of bottling up Ray Davis. Ray Davis ran all day, all night on who was it they played when he went off for like 200 some odd yards?
Florida.
I can't remember.
Florida.
Yeah, yeah. But he ran all day on Florida, and Tennessee's defense was able to bottle him up for about 3 yards of carry in this one. So was pretty happy with that. Devin Leary had himself a day. It's a Tennessee tradition to make somewhat mediocre quarterbacks look like Heisman contenders. You don't have to go very far back in the history to see that. You saw it against Florida this year. Was it 2001? SEC championship game with Rohan Davey coming off the bench and looking like a Heisman contender. That will always be seared into my memory because it was awful and I hated it. But you know, Tennessee does that sometimes. We don't play against quarterbacks really well. And on a personal note, part of the reason why I'm in the SEC offices today is because I need Greg Sankey to do something about the awful officiating top to bottom. How many holding calls are going to happen in a Tennessee game before we start throwing flags? Because I saw like holding like seven, and I'm not like talking like, oh, he tugged his jersey, oh, his hands on his shoulder. No, I'm talking like he has his arm around the guy's neck and nobody's calling anything. Like, I'm just like, what is even happening right now? There were several pass interference calls that should have been called both ways that didn't get called, and just officiating feels like every year it gets worse and worse and worse, and I don't know what to do about that in the conference. I forget the guy's name. Pate State. What's that guy's name? Pate. Oh, bald fellow in the white t-shirt. He's on TikTok.
Josh Pate.
Thank you, Josh. I was trying to remember his first name. Josh Pate has been for the last 2 to 3 years saying that the conference needs to hire full-time refs and that if they suck at their jobs, they need to be reprimanded, they need to be removed, they need to be fired. They need to find a way to make better officiating happen. It needs to happen. I completely agree with him. Something needs to be done. The officiating in this conference is awful. I'm done.
Yeah, no. I can't argue there. Grant, what you got for Tennessee at Kentucky?
Yeah, to kind of touch on the officiating thing, you know, I think it's funny, too, that, you know, it's so bad to the point that even the broadcasters, you know, in the Alabama game, the Kentucky game, and other games that I've seen, they're just incredulous that just like the egregious misses that the refs, you know, are it's like, what? How do they not call that? How do they miss that? I don't know. And Matt's right. It's getting worse every season. Yeah, I mean, if we could just fork up the money, I mean, the SEC makes the money. If they could just fork up the money to pay refs like they have in the NFL, whatever, I mean, it would just change. It would change the outcomes of the season, of games, of everything. You know, it really would be a night and day difference, I think. And prior to the show, I mean, I know Matt and I kind of discussed that Alabama game for a second because I wasn't on the show the other day. But, I mean, it was horrendous there. And obviously, you know, I'm going to have a little bias as a Tennessee fan, just a little. But I just, you know, Kentucky was the same way. And then, you know, the announcers were also just harping about just how well the offensive line was protecting Leary. Oh, Tennessee, who leads the nation in sacks or top 10, you know, they don't have a sack halfway through the game. That's insane. And it's like, it's not really if you just kind of watch what happened there at the left tackle. But in any case, going to the game, yes, it has been excellent, in my opinion, to see Milton finally in his sixth year seniorship decide to lower his shoulder and truck somebody, okay? Because, I mean, I was at that Ole Miss game, Mustard Gate, back a couple years ago, and last play of the game, he runs out of bounds. Yeah, I mean, I was there. And I was just like, okay, I'm done with this guy. So fast forward 2 years, we're now seeing him lower his shoulder and run people over, and I'm loving it because if he can continue to work on this, his running's improving. If he continues to do that, then we have another threat that I think, you know, when the Bulldogs come to Neyland, you know, it might pay dividends for us. Beyond that, I totally agree. Jalen Wright is one of the best backs in the league. And I'm not talking just the conference. I mean, the guy is just explosive, dynamic. He's fast. He's elusive. And then right behind him, you've got Jabari Small and Dylan Sampson. Sampson is also incredible.
Samson's nasty. If Samson, he gets a full head of steam, he could be dangerous.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to shout out also to Tim Banks, Tennessee's defensive coordinator, because, you know, a lot of people give him a lot of flack because, yes, Tennessee gives up yards. Yes, you know, we have given up a lot of points. But on the same token, you know, with the offensive scheme that Heupel runs, the defense is on the field more than the average defense, okay? And so last year especially, I mean, you know, I think they did well with what they had to work with because Tennessee would score so quickly, right? I mean, they're on the field sometimes like 42 minutes a game. So, I mean, yeah, it's less this season. But so, I mean, if you just look at the improvements that we have made in the pass game and the run game and then look at the game planning, the scheming, you know, just like, you know, okay, yeah, we made Devin Leary look great this game, right? Well, let's think about it, though. Kentucky's offense is predicated on their running attack or the rushing attack, and we held, what was it, 60 Ray Davis to 42 yards on 16 carries, right? So less than three yards per carry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you stop that, you let them throw. Hey, Devin Leary can't throw that well. Okay. Well, we're going to let him throw. And kudos to Leary. He threw well. I mean, his throws were pretty much on the money every time. But I mean, that's what happens when you put, you know, 7-8 in the box and just kind of give them the field to play with. So in any case, credit to Tim Banks for scheming that, you know, defense for the game and coming out with a win. I'll be the second to say I was very nervous heading into Kroger Field for a night game, especially after the abysmal performance we had in the Swamp and then the collapse in Tuscaloosa. So, I mean, but on the same note, you know, Matt, you know as well as I do, Tennessee just kind of beats Kentucky like every year, you know. So, I mean, it doesn't matter if we're bad and they're good. We're going to beat Kentucky.
I saw somebody with the stat. I think we've lost them three times in the last 28 years or something like that.
We've lost 4 and 41.
That's what it is. I knew it was some ridiculous number. And, and when you look at it, I mean, the Tennessee-Kentucky game is always somewhat competitive. It's just we always find a way to win the thing. It's kind of like, you know, how it is with Vanderbilt.
It seems, especially lately, it seems like it has been one of those where it's a close game, but Tennessee finds a way to win.
That's what I'm every year. And like at no point during the game did I feel like, oh no, we're going to lose. I mean, I was like, Tennessee will win.
I don't think we trailed in any part in this game either. I think that probably also.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think we did. I kept saying the whole game, I was saying, wow, like Kentucky will not go away, right? Because I kept thinking,
climbing back into it.
Every time Tennessee would score, I was like, all right, well, that's going to be the one to blow it wide open. And Tennessee would, you know, come back and keep it a game. So, like you said, Leary had by far the best game that we've seen him play in a Kentucky uniform. Ray Davis, he did have some good runs, but as you said, for the most part, bottle them up. Tennessee wins a nail biter on the road. That's got to do something for their confidence, right? As you mentioned, road struggles. And you know, Kroger Field's nothing to sneeze at. You know, they have a good atmosphere there and the fans get crazy and you know, they've had all day to drink and party and stuff like that. So it was an intimidating environment and they came through. So good on them. So
and something weird with the smoke. I don't understand what we were doing with the smoke.
I saw that. I don't.
It's like we were playing football on a Civil War battlefield. I didn't know what was going on.
Actually, I thought that was just fog. I mean, was it actually like a smoke machine?
I don't know.
It looked like somebody shot fireworks off. Is what it looked like.
I think it was smoke out of like machines or something.
People were vaping, maybe.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. Maybe.
But hey, right. Weston, and I'll say, well, you kind of real quick, you kind of pointed out like, oh, Kentucky just wouldn't go away. Well, I mean, to be fair, this game is a huge game for Kentucky. Okay, this is actually a rivalry game that goes back a long way. You know, the battle for the barrel there. So, I mean, obviously the barrel went away, but Kentucky still holds this game in very high regard. So, I don't think they're ever just gonna, you know, lay down and take it. But Tennessee, on the other hand, like I said, we beat Kentucky. It's fine. We're focused on, you know, bigger teams.
I feel like any kind of game with a neighboring state is always going to be worth something, right? So,
except for Missouri.
Well, yeah, you know. All right, let's move on to the last one, and that was Vanderbilt at Ole Miss. Ole Miss winning this one decisively, 33-7. Matt got the point here. Obviously, Ole Miss is trending up, but with Vandy's quarterback situation being what it is and not really being able to find a real leader under center, this to me, like, it almost wasn't a fair fight. Case in point, redshirt freshman Walter Taylor. That's right. We haven't mentioned that name on the show at all this year. Came in the second quarter to try and provide a spark at quarterback for Vandy. And although he had some success early on, he only passed for 38 yards and an interception. So
that stat line's awful. What's the QBR? I got to go look.
Look that up, please.
I'm going to look up the QBR. It's got to be like 12.
Lane Kiffin kind of sheepishly acknowledged that he didn't actually know who Taylor was. his press conference was like, you know, a lot of coaches won't admit this, but I didn't know who that was. But apparently that didn't matter as they won in a blowout. So, Grant, do you have any thoughts on Vandy at Ole Miss? Obviously, it wasn't super exciting, but what do you got?
I have not really watched Vanderbilt at all this season.
They always get off to a quick start, right? Because they play
and Hawaii.
Yeah.
Right.
They usually play those week zero games. So we always make the joke, hey, Vandy's leading, you know, they have the most wins in the SEC so far. And then,
most wins in college football. Yeah. Cause they play Incarnate Word. I don't really follow Vanderbilt. I know they've got problems. They've always had problems. I mean, I think they've been relevant one time in the past few decades, and that was under Franklin.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think Clark Lea is getting them to play maybe some more physical football. It's just one of those things that's going to take time. You know, Vanderbilt hasn't recruited for football, you know, up there with
– they have higher academic standards.
Their academic standards are pretty crazy.
You know, Jackson Dart, he continues to be a good quarterback. Judkins is still good in the backfield. I mean, Ole Miss is a tough team. And, you know, going into this game, it kind of turned out about what I would have expected it to be. Not really a whole lot more to say on it other than, you know, still not the biggest Lane Kiffin fan.
You still
there's still some residual hatred there, Grant.
I'm still missing my golf ball from that game. Okay. It was a good ball. It was a Pro V1.
When Grant went to that game, he had a full thing of mustard, and he was going to use it too, but it just was the right thing to do. It just felt right.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So that does it for last week's games. Current pick 'em standings. I've got 31. Matt has 25. Jesse has 16. We have, you know, a little bit to go here and lots of games worth more points. So we will see what happens. Yes, sir.
Just so we're all clear on this, that QB rating was 14.4. For Walter Taylor.
Ouch.
There's that. But he did have 59 yards on the ground, with 20 carries, which is an average of 3.2. Anyway, Wes, let's go ahead and move on.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into some exciting news.
Here's the news.
All right. Well, if you missed it, the first CFP rankings were released on Tuesday, Halloween. And as they go, number one, Ohio State, number two, Georgia, number three, Michigan, number four, Florida State, number five, Washington, number six, Oregon, number seven, Texas, number eight, Alabama, number nine, Oklahoma, number 10, Ole Miss. And then the remaining SEC teams, number 12, Missouri, number 14, LSU, and number 17, Tennessee. What are your thoughts? We see the first CFP rankings. Do we have issue with any of those? How are we feeling?
I'll defer to Grant. Go ahead, Grant.
I have no issue with these rankings. The only thing I would say is, you know, maybe swap Florida State and Washington. Washington's had a close call. Florida State's had a few of them. Honestly, other than that, you know, Oregon, their one loss comes to Washington. Alabama's comes to Texas. Oklahoma, I feel like Oklahoma might be a little high, given that their loss was to Kansas, who, it's, I mean, not a terrible team, but it is Kansas. But the thing, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, all these, college football rankings, and playoff rankings and everything else, I mean, at this time, in this moment, it's largely just kind of speculation or it's flux. I mean, it'll all work itself out by the end of the season, kind of like it always does, right? I have no issue with the current rankings as they are. I do think Ohio State or Michigan should be one, and I think that whoever wins that game should be number one, assuming the other, you know, they're both still undefeated. And Georgia at two. I mean, I could easily put them at three, but again, it doesn't ultimately really matter. And I'm content with where everything currently stands.
Grant is content. What do you think, Matt?
I don't really have much to say about it either. Aside from, you know, if you look at the strength of schedule, Ohio State is ranked. I had it just a second ago, I've lost it. Ohio State has a harder, according to the metric at least, has a harder schedule than Georgia does. So that makes sense.
Rutgers is just brutal. Well,
I'm just telling you what the numbers say, Wes. You have to admit, Georgia hasn't played anybody at a conference.
Although the conference the schedule is looking better for Georgia as we've gotten further into the season.
Well, I mean, yeah, kind of. But again, I don't really – I'm okay with this front four. I think Ohio State at one's okay. I think Michigan at two is okay. Michigan at three is fine. It warms the cockles of my heart to see Florida State up there again. I've always had a soft spot for Florida State since Bobby Bowden was there, so I'm okay with it. I find it really funny that there's a whole load of Pac-12 teams that are in this mix with Washington and Oregon. I am kind of curious what things are going to look. I'm shocked that Oklahoma is still in the top 10 after a bad loss to Kansas. But aside from that, in fact, putting a one-loss Oklahoma ahead of a one-loss Ole Miss is just heinous in my book. But either way, these things mean nothing. They're going to not mean anything at all until we get to the last weekend of the season and everything's kind of been decided. So I don't have anything to complain about. Not much anyway.
It's all set up to play out, you know, like you were saying anyway. I don't personally, I love it. I am glad that Georgia is not number one, especially going into this. That could be one of those games where you find yourself maybe feeling a little bit good about yourself going into a Mizzou at home. And maybe I'm not calling it a trap game because, I mean, obviously every game means something right now, especially with Mizzou vying for the East still. I mean, you know, if they beat Georgia, they're in the driver's seat.
Wes, I swear you're always looking up for the rat poison. Can you just have it one time? Just say, yes. Yeah, we're good. You know, we're great.
I am angry right now. No, the what it's even better about this is I know the first person, the person who is way happier than I am is Kirby Smart, right? Because he's like, Georgia is number two. That gives fuel for my players. You know, I am going to be preaching every day in practice about how we're disrespected. You know, nobody believes in you, blah, blah, blah. We got to show them on the field. And I mean, it's everything that you would want as a coach, right? So, no, I think it's perfect. So we'll see how it works out. I don't necessarily have any issues with the others. Like we said, a lot of it's going to play out just the way the regular season is laid out anyway. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, it's kind of cool to see it for the first time on paper, kind of how the committee's feeling about things, how it's feeling about schedules, strength of schedule and things like that. So,
Every time I see this, though, Wes, it makes me wonder, like, how much fun it's going to be when we finally get to a 12-team playoff.
Oh, absolutely.
Because look at the matchups you get right out of the gate. First four get a bye. You get Missouri traveling to Washington. You have Ole Miss traveling to Oregon. That by itself would be enough to make
so many great matchups.
Oklahoma would travel to Texas. Or they go up. Oh, I guess they would travel.
So you would actually. Sorry to cut you off. It would be Penn State's number 11, which kind of got hosed by still being behind Oklahoma. Their one loss was to Ohio State, so they would go to Oregon. But yeah, and then Ole Miss, Texas.
Either or, it just yeah. I want this so bad. Just make it happen, NCAA. What are we waiting on?
Right. These are like the bowl games that we wish would happen, right? And then you get them with this expanded playoff,
right?
It's crazy how that happens.
Damn playoff and call it a day.
Do any other bowl games matter at that point, though?
No, right. No.
So they do
really.
For the kids and for the schools that play in, I'm sure. But in the grand scheme, no.
It would matter for us as Tennessee fans at 17.
Nobody cares who won the Citrus Bowl last year. Citrus Bowl doesn't exist anymore, but you get my idea.
Right. Yeah. So Yeah, we'll have to see how those unfold every week. It's nice to actually finally have some rankings that matter, right? Instead of just quoting the AP, we're like, eh, it's a make-believe poll. It sounds, you know, it's great to have numbers, but it doesn't count. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into the upcoming games.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Okay, so the first game that we have is Texas A&M at 5-3, 3-2 in the SEC at Ole Miss. They are 7-1, 4-1 in the SEC. That's noon on ESPN. The experts are expecting a really close one here. Matt, what do you got?
I just, A&M has had their struggles. I think Ole Miss is the better team. I think Ole Miss wins this thing. Again, I just don't foresee Ole Miss laying this one down. So I'm going to say Ole Miss wins this thing 28-20. And I think that it'll probably be 28-13 going into the fourth quarter, and then Texas A&M will score late to make it look closer than it really was.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, they're expecting a close one. In my mind, these teams are incredibly even. And I honestly don't know who to pick. So I'm going to take a page out of your playbook, Matt, and I'm going to flip a coin. All right. So heads, A&M, tails, Ole Miss. So let's see what happens here. It is heads. I'm going with A&M. And I'm going to say A&M 28-24.
Well, when you have a 6-game lead in the standings, you can afford to leave things to fade occasionally.
Well, no, it's literally that close with this one. I don't know. So we actually don't have Jesse's picks in. We will get those obviously before the games start. Grant, what is your prediction for this one?
Just kind of for the viewers or listeners, we kind of keep track of our scores here, and I just put mine just right in line with where the games are laid out. So I don't know if you see it here, but
oh yeah.
In any case, yeah. I actually think that Jimbo, you know, he's feeling pressure. He's getting pretty hot. And I think Ole Miss is getting a little too confident, you know? And so, Ole Miss wasn't able to move the ball much on Alabama's defense. And truth be told, you stack them up pound for pound, I think Aggie's defense is better than Bama's right now. So, and I think that Aggie's offense, albeit it is not great, neither is Ole Miss's defense. So really they shake out pretty evenly, I think. And I agree that it's going to be a close game, but give me Aggie in this one, 27-24.
Okay. All right. We'll have to wait with bated breath on that one. The next one, UConn 1-7 at Tennessee, 6-2. That is noon on the SEC Network. Matt, what's your pick?
Listen, Gino Aram is a great coach. He's a jerkweed, but he's a great coach. I really think Lady Vols are – oh, I'm sorry. We're talking football, not basketball. listen, UConn's, like, historically one of the worst football programs in the league, in the country. Like, the last 5 years, they're in the bottom 10 every stinking time. I don't think UConn's going to be able to hang in here. I don't foresee this game being close at any point. In fact, I'm going to actually change my score a little bit. I said it was originally going to be 42-24. I'm going to say 42-10 instead now, because it's UConn, and UConn can go jump in a lake, especially Gino Auriemma.
Yeah. Well, we got a few snoozers this week, and this is certainly one of them. Maybe not if it was basketball, like you said, but I'm going to go UT 49-7. Grant, what's your pick?
Oh, I mean, it would have been a much better year if Tennessee was announced number one in the polls going into the UConn game instead of the Georgia game last year. UConn is bad. You know, and when I say bad, they're really, really bad. So I've got the Vols rolling easily in this one, 52-10. I think all we right. See some Nico.
Okay.
I hope we get to see some Nico so the people that are calling for him to start will shut up.
Yeah, I don't want him to start, but I
don't understand why this is a thing. Like, guys, calm down. He's going to get a chance. You just got to let him work for a second. My God.
Yeah. It just goes to show when you get spoiled with a good quarterback, you know, all it takes is just any kind of little hiccup, even, you know, and Milton's done fine for the most part. But when you get spoiled like that, you're like, all right, well, what's the deal here? So,
Yeah, bring in the freshman that's making $10 million in NLTs or NITs or ACLs or whatever they're called.
Right.
Right.
All right. Next is Arkansas 2-6, 0-5 in the SEC at Florida 5-3, 3-2 in the SEC. That's noon on ESPN2. Matt, what's your prediction for Arkansas at Florida?
I just hate that Arkansas has caught themselves at this point. I just feel like they should be a much better program than they are right now. Again, we on the podcast here have a really soft spot in our heart for Sam Pittman. And I just don't think it's going to happen this weekend either. I really want them to be able to pull this off, but I just don't see it happening. I'm going to say 21-10 Florida. And I think that 10 turns late. So look for 21-3 going into this game pretty late.
Yeah, Matt, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I really want to pick Arkansas because I want them to get their first conference win. I don't want Sam Pittman to get fired. but the Gators are at home, and we know the Swamp is a tough place to play. I'm going to say Gators 27-21. Grant?
I agree with both you guys, and I hate it for Arkansas, hate it for Pittman. I mean, I think KJ Jefferson is one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. I don't know what's going on with Arky. I mean, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of the that coach they had recently, Chad
Morris.
Chad, yeah. Oh, it's kind of like, you know what he kind of had there, but hopefully it's just kind of a rebuilding year for Pittman. But I do agree. I think the Gators win this one. I've got 31-21, a little higher scoring than you guys picked, and I think Pittman's going to come out of this game and his seat's going to be boiling at that point.
One thing I am curious to see is we talk about KJ Jefferson and kind of the regression there, probably because of play calling. I mean, well, Enos is out as OC at Arkansas. So does that change? Do we see a different style of gameplay on the offensive side now? And that would be interesting. That's going to be an interesting storyline to watch for this one. So next is Jacksonville State at 7-2 at South Carolina, 2-6, noon on ESPNU. Matt, what is your prediction for Jacksonville State at South Carolina?
Oh, boy. Y'all better buckle up for this one. This is going to be fun. Listen, Jacksonville State, whose mascot is the Gamecocks, is taking on South Carolina, whose mascot is the Gamecocks. So it's a cockfight in Columbia. So there, you got that going for you. And then on top of everything, when you look at the two losses that Jacksonville State has, both those losses are to Coastal Carolina, who are the Chanticleers, which is also a chicken. And then their other loss is to Liberty, who are the Flames, but their mascot is a bird. So
something about birds.
Put all of it together. I feel like that guy, it's like the meme with Charlie from the Sunny in Philadelphia, where he's always pointing everything. Anyway, South Carolina is going to win this ball game, but there is a lot of stuff going on here. But Carolina wins this ball game. Beamer kind of finally gets things back together, and you end up with Jacksonville State getting their third loss. So I'm going to say SoCar wins 30-14.
Yeah, they got to be careful here. Jacksonville State, they're a decent team and could pull off the upset.
If they do, he's going to be in so much trouble.
Oh, yeah. But I am going to say that the Gamecocks do better in this one, the South Carolina version, and they win this one 35-21. Grant, what you got?
I agree with you there, Wes. I've got South Carolina winning 38-24. I think, you know, even though they're not the best team in the SEC or even in FBS, Jacksonville State is a solid team. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're going to put up some points. But, yeah, I think South Carolina wins this one 38-24. And I just, you know, Matt, I just think it's funny how, you know, how much you obviously like Shane Beamer. I mean, it's palpable.
Shane Beamer has probably surpassed Drinky in my hierarchy of.
I think a lot of it has to do with that game against Tennessee last year.
Yeah,
especially even more so now with the suspected shenanigans going on behind the scene.
Not to mention the fact that Beamer's just insufferable, but.
Hey, one other thing I do want to say, it would not surprise me at all if Jacksonville State pulled this upset. I mean, as far as every metric goes, that should not happen. But Jacksonville State's going to be fired up for this game. You know, sure. I mean, they're going to be coming in to prove a point. Exactly. And I mean, South Carolina, you know, even though they're 2-6, Jacksonville State's not looking at the record. They're looking at, hey, this is a big, you know, D1 SEC school that we're about to go punch in the mouth. So would not surprise me to see Jacksonville State pull the upset here.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move to Missouri, 7-1, 3-1 in the SEC at Georgia, 8-0, 5-0 in the SEC. That's 3:30 on CBS. Matt, what is your prediction for Mizzou at Georgia? I think Matt is frozen. So let's go ahead and skip to you, Grant. What is your prediction for Missouri at Georgia?
Missouri is a solid team. But Georgia, as they've shown for the past two seasons and as they've shown without Bowers, they're just really kind of on another level. And I think Missouri will be able to throw the ball on Georgia just as Mertz did with Florida. But at the end of the day, you know, Georgia's defense is going to probably pull together in the second half and only give up like 3 points. And then Carson Beck will, you know, have his, you know, realization of greatness, you know, about midway through the second quarter. So I've got Georgia winning 41-27.
The realization of greatness. Sorry, Matt, I it looked like you were frozen there, so we skipped ahead. What do you got?
That's completely fine. My internet decided to go womp on me. So listen, going back to coaches I can't stand, Drinky is just as insufferable as Beamer is in my book. However, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, I want Missouri to win this game so badly. So badly. I want it more than anything I've wanted in the last 2 hours. So with that being said, I want them to win this. But on the flip side of that, I'm also realistic and aware that Missouri has lived a very fortunate life up to this point. And I don't think they're going to make it through this game without losing. So I think Georgia wins this thing. I think Georgia has a pretty commanding lead going into the fourth quarter. And I think that Georgia is just fine. So I'm at the 35-14 Georgia.
Okay. So here's the thing. Like previously, I picked Georgia to cover, and they didn't. Then last week, I said they wouldn't cover, and they did. So truthfully, like I said before, Georgia being put at number two is the best outcome that Kirby Smart could have hoped for when it comes to the rankings. So hopefully all that inspiration will help out. I think that pays off big. Plus, Georgia is at home, right? So I would be a lot more nervous if this was in Columbia. We just seem to kind of struggle there. I don't know if it's just like the kind of the lazy feel of a smaller stadium. I don't know, but we tend to kind of show up asleep to that game. But Georgia's got to control the explosive plays by Mizzou. You know, they have a pretty potent offense. If Georgia's defense can contain that at least somewhat and then supply a few big plays of their own, I think that they do get it done. I'm going to go Georgia here 34-21. So, all right, let's move to Auburn 4-4, 1-4 in the SEC at Vanderbilt 2-7, 0-5 in the SEC, 4 o'clock on SEC Network. Matt, what's your prediction?
That one. We've been talking about how awful Vanderbilt's been for a while. I don't foresee them being able to do much here. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Auburn. Freeze gets his second conference win. Auburn rolls 28-10.
Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a safe pick. This one might be the dumpster fire game of the week, as both teams only have one conference win between them. Again, I don't think Auburn will stay there, right? Just as things are right now for this season. As far as this game goes, Auburn really has a lovely time in Nashville. They take in the sights and sounds of the Music City. Hopefully Hugh Freeze doesn't have too much fun on the Broadway scene. Anyway, in terms of what will actually happen in First Bank Stadium on the actual field, Auburn wins 31-17. Grant.
I think it's just going to be a snoozer. Auburn's going to get out front early, dominate. Vandy, you know, maybe the 14 quarterback rating can up to like an 18. I don't know. I've got Auburn winning this one 34-13. And really, I think it's going to be like 34-6 till late. They get kind of a garbage time touchdown, make it look a little bit better, but still get blown out. So,
okay. All right. Next is Kentucky at 5-3, 2-3 in the SEC at Mississippi State, 4-4, 1-4 in the SEC, 7:30 on SEC Network. Matt, your prediction for Kentucky at Mississippi State.
Ooh, gracious. This is a game where it can go one of two ways. Either one, it's going to be real competitive, or something weird's going to happen, and you're going to end up with Mississippi State finding a way to win this ball game. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Kentucky wins. I think Kentucky's probably smarting a little bit after that loss to Tennessee last week. I think they're going to be looking to get a little bit of payback in this one. So I'm going to say Kentucky wins 28-14.
That's a good point, and I think Devin Leary builds on that performance of last week, which in turn opens up the run game for Ray Davis. So I'm going to go Kentucky here, 27-21. Grant?
I agree with both you guys. I think Kentucky's the better team. I think they're going to be fired up after last week's game. They're hunting, you know, their sixth win for bowl eligibility. So I got the Cats winning 35-21.
That's a good point as well. All right. So finally, LSU, 6-2, 4-1 in the SEC at Alabama, 7-1, 5-0 in the SEC. This is 7:45 on CBS and a huge game. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, the implications in this one are pretty gigantic, because if LSU finds a way to beat Bama, then you're looking potentially at one loss for Bama, one loss for Ole Miss, one loss for LSU. So I think all three of them have beat each other. And then it's going to come down to what happens in the last couple of weeks going forward. Bama has had their struggles this year, but Bama's found a way to win ball games. With that being said, I like Bama's chances here. It's at Bama. It's a night game. That's a tough environment. So I'm going to give Bama the edge here, but I'm going to say Bama wins this thing late. We're talking a last-minute touchdown, and I'm going to say Bama wins 28-27.
It's a good pick. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, this will decide the West, you know, barring some, you know, crazy, you know, fallout from other games. But so this may be the biggest regular season game to date for any SEC team this year. Question is, can Bama contain Jaden Daniels, right? Sure, this game is at home for Bama, but we've seen Bama not look so dominant at home like we're used to seeing. They'll definitely need the defense to make this a manageable game from an offensive standpoint. I don't think Bama wants to get in any kind of shootout situation going on here. I'm conflicted because I feel like LSU might have been the better team. But as you said, Matt, Bama has kind of gotten better as the season has gone along. So I can't trust this one to a coin flip, though. I'm going to go and make the difficult decision. I'm going to go with Bama 34-31. Grant, what's your prediction?
An interesting weekend here because essentially you have two games that are more or less going to decide who represents the East and the West, right? You got Georgia and Missouri.
Potentially, yeah.
I mean, obviously, Ole Miss is still a contender there, but they still have to go through Georgia as well. So I think in this particular game, I know you guys said, oh, Bama always finds a way to win. So this game is going to be more about finding a way to stop Jaden Daniels. He has been absolutely prolific this year. I think LSU is going to kind of score at will against Bama. And the question is, can LSU's defense stop Alabama's offense? And, you know, based on what we've seen from Milroe and company this, you know, this season so far, I don't think they're going to stop them much, but I do think they'll get at least a couple key stops. So this one's for Jesse. I've got LSU, go Tigers, winning 45-35 in T-Town.
Okay.
Jesse will be not happy if that happens. She'll be so
pissed. Yeah. I mean, it has come down to this game, it seems, or, you know, between these two teams the past, you know, or at least out of the last 4 or 5 years, it seems like it's happened a lot where it's between LSU and Bama. So,
yeah, at least the East is keeping it interesting with, you know, who's going to challenge Georgia.
Right.
And Matt, just for what it's worth, after that Texas Alabama game, I texted Wes and said, hey, man, you might want to check on Jesse, you know.
Yeah,
it was a rough day for her.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, they've bounced back. And obviously that was a non-conference loss, too. So not right. The end of the world. So we'll see. Of course, you know, LSU's got the same thing going on with that loss at the beginning of the season, too. So anyway. All right. So definitely looking forward to that one. It's going to be an exciting slate of games coming up this weekend. Looking forward to watching those. So Grant, I'm glad you're able to join us tonight. It was a lot of fun chatting with you.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, until so for the listeners, we appreciate you guys listening to us. If you'd like to contact us, please email us at pigskinsandpageantry@gmail.com. We are at Pigskins and Pageantry on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook. We are on X at PPSEC Podcast.
Twitter!
We were on a work meeting today, and somebody was talking about Twitter, and I was like, what is Twitter? Is that some new app or something?
What is X? X is Twitter?
don't forget, we're available for download on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn Radio, most podcasting apps for iPhone, Android, and other operating systems. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review. We'd love 5 stars. It would help our visibility and us to keep getting out there. Like I said, exciting games. Looking forward to it. Until next time, this is Wes. Go Dogs. Matt, go ahead, and then we'll...
I get to go second.
You get to go second.
Yeah. Hey, go Vols.
Hey, and just like Matt said, go Vols, guys.